time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
The coaches at Oklahoma and Notre Dame said, can't do it here.
With SI's Pat Forty.
It's shocking. These are the two most surprising days I have seen in, 17 years of covering national college football.
Here's Pat and Dan.
Hi, welcome to the emergency pod. Man, the sequel to Rudy is really sucks for Notre Dame fans, doesn't it?
Yeah.
My love and devotion to this place is so sincere. We might make the playoff for the third time in 4 years. I'm sitting on a top five recruiting class. I've got the greatest collection of student athletes, and I'm out of here, baby. Pat, anything going on? We may do an emergency pod every night this week. I feel like we should just be on 20, which is live stream.
We really should.
Twitch. So much crap going on. By the way, Pete is not here. Pete's flying in an airplane. He's flying back to back home, so he can't be on. So it's just Pat and I.
Yeah.
Yeah. The news, obviously, Brian Kelly.
It's you and me and a Sierra Nevada celebration now because I need one for tonight's emergency pod.
Okay. You and a lot of Irish fans.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Bayou Brian Kelly leaves with a group text that says, yeah, I'll talk to you tomorrow. Sorry, I got to go.
I can read you the group
text. What boss is leaving you and it makes you get up at like 6:30 to walk into the football office?
That's a good point.
7 a.m. meeting?
Let me read this.
If I'm a Notre Dame player.
Yeah. Men, let me first apologize for the late night text and more importantly for not being able to share the news with you in person that I'll be leaving Notre Dame. Well, just apologize for leaving. I am flying back to South Bend tonight to be able to meet with you in the morning, but the news broke late today, and I'm sorry you found out through social media or news reports. I'll have more to share with you when we meet tomorrow at 7 a.m. I mean, dude, it's like snowing in South Bend. These guys, poor kids. Our program, it ain't your program anymore.
Nope.
Is elite because of your hard work and commitment. I know that will continue. Whatever, Coach Kelly. I mean, we have got a lot to dig through here, okay?
Oh, boy, do we.
Now, look, we discussed whether Brian Kelly would leave like 3 weeks ago because all of us had heard Brian Kelly might leave. We all kind of concluded I thought he wanted the money. I thought he would stay because his recruiting, he had the program where he wanted. He literally could make the third playoff in 4 years, and his recruiting's really good. But in the end, he did not, but it was certainly I think we all concluded he's probably not leaving, but there he goes. Let's just start with this. This sport is nuts. It's always been nuts. This is why we like it. But he's like one result. Cincinnati loses. Alabama loses by a couple touchdowns. Baylor beats Oklahoma State. Any of these results, none of which would be like complete shockers. And he's in the playoffs. Or Notre Dame's in the playoff, and he leaves. What coach? We'll get to all whether it's a smart career, long term, money. I'm not beating on Brian Kelly, but it's like, coach, dude, we got a chance, right? No, we don't. It's a 4-team playoff. There's only four, and we could be one of them. And the coach is like, yeah. These other guys went 6-6, though. I think I'll go coach them. Like what?
It's mind-boggling. Like it says to me a couple of things. First of all, it says he's thinking even if we're making that playoff, we're getting housed, and I'm tired of getting housed in the playoff.
Which is true, I think. Do think it's probably true. But man, you don't normally see the coach admit it.
Oh no, no, you don't. This goes so far against everything coaches talk to players about from that first January meeting when they all come back, when they make them come back to school early from Christmas break because they've got to start doing the conditioning because we got to build a unit. We've got to build togetherness. You know, at 6 a.m. on a 10-degree day in South Bend, we all got to drag our asses out of bed and go into the indoor facility and run till we puke. We got to do that to build togetherness for this team. We're all going to grab the rope together. Hey, you know what? I gotta go to LSU. Sorry, we might go to the playoff. Yeah, gotta go. Gotta go. What a hypocrite. What a weasel.
I have just never heard of a coach quit on the final four. Like, it's just not a long shot. Like, it's even by my anyone listens to this podcast knows I bring incredible cynicism to everything. But honestly, God, you might make the playoff. And the reason he's doing it, and this is a telling part of college football, and this is where we are at in college football with the speculation and the potential and all of that. And I'm not even going to argue that he's wrong about this. He wants to win a national title. This is a great football coach. He won two Division II national titles. He built the Cincinnati program to where they went undefeated. Then he left them before a big bowl game back when those things mattered to go to Notre Dame. And he's the winningest coach at Notre Dame. Of course, he didn't win a national title, but it's a whole different world now. You're not getting poll voters that only watch you on TV and all that. You got to earn it. He's maxed out Notre Dame probably. He wants to win a national title. He's 60 years old. He looks at the sport, and I don't disagree with him, but he looks and says LSU, which is 11-11 the last 2 years, has a better chance of winning. I can win a national championship there better than I can at this program that is, I think they're 44-6 the last 4 years and could make a third play literally in the playoff, and thinks I can't win it there. And so beyond the lack of like, hey, let's give this thing a try. Maybe we spring an upset. This would be the greatest story ever. You know, the Rudy mythology of college football, where it is, and it's thicker at Notre Dame than anywhere. He literally is like, can't be done here. I'm out. I'll rather rebuild at LSU.
Yeah. No, that's what this boils down to. And I wrote this, you know, he's seen Najee Harris leap over his tacklers. He has seen Trevor Lawrence pick his secondary apart. He has seen C.J. Mosley sack his quarterback. Those are your last three times Notre Dame came within a sniff of a national title and they got housed. And he said, I need more of those guys and I need a place where it's easier to get them in school and get all the accoutrements that players say they want and need these days. And so he's going to one of the very few schools that's been able to win a national championship in the last 10 years. We're talking about Alabama, Clemson, LSU, Ohio State. Notre Dame has been very good. Notre Dame has not been championship good. He wants to go someplace where he can close that gap. There's no doubt about that. The thing is, as it was put to me, I think that Kelly has wearied of trying to push Notre Dame off of being what Notre Dame has always been. Somebody said that if he leaves, it's going to be because he wants Notre Dame to be, quote, less Notre Dame-like, which means theoretically, all right, look, he's already gotten Notre Dame to make some exceptions, more academic exceptions than it used to make. He has gotten Notre Dame to build some facilities. What other things? Okay, well, majors. Maybe he would like to see some different majors involved. Maybe he wants more academic exceptions. Maybe he doesn't want the freshman players to not be able to live with each other and have to live with regular students. Maybe he wants a slide and a waterfall and a miniature golf course that Notre Dame ain't going to do. Maybe he wants different scheduling, whatever the case. Maybe he wants ACC affiliation or conference affiliation of some kind. Those things Notre Dame is not going to do. Not for even Brian Kelly, the winningest coach in school history. So don't ask. Those are non-starters. Notre Dame hadn't won a national title since 1988. Guess what? They're in the top 10 in the country in endowment. They're in the top 20 in everybody's academic rankings. It hasn't winning at football hasn't stopped Notre Dame from doing the things that Notre Dame most takes pride in, which is making money and putting out elite academic products. So
people sometimes ask, like, the battles Brian Kelly had, like one of them, I'm going to get the story, maybe some of the details wrong, but Notre Dame wants their football players to be normal students. So yes, you live in a dorm and this is not the plushest dorm and no. It's not at a place, you know, there's a lazy river going around the dorm. Okay. They got a golden dome and a lot of snow and a grotto and it's a beautiful place if that's what you like. But they used to have to eat in the dining common or whatever they call it. And the players had to get done with practice and go to the dining common before the dining common closed and eat with the regular students. And early on in his tenure, he had to fight to allow them to have a training table for the players late. And they didn't want to do that because the players now weren't eating like regular students. But the team would, these guys would miss dinner enough that they'd like lose strength and lose weight like during the season. And it was just a simple, like, come on. I mean, this is easy stuff, right? The offensive line needs to eat. That was the kind of stuff that you have to fight. Notre Dame's very hesitant on those things. So it's what Brian Kelly's done at Notre Dame, I think we've always been quite, you know, we're always praising, like, my goodness, this guy just wins football games. He's done an incredible job at Notre Dame. They had that one bad year and he rebooted it. So this is a great coach. This is a guy who's won a lot of games. And the thing that he does with LSU, because LSU has got player after player wants to go there. Everyone in Louisiana, not only is it the only Power 5 school in Louisiana, but the kids in Louisiana all want to play for LSU. I think they have the top 8 players right now in the state of Louisiana still committed to LSU, and they haven't had a coach for 2 months.
Yeah, right.
Okay? And they all just stuck on their commitment waiting to see who LSU would get. They all want to play at LSU. There's tons of great players. He looks at this thing and says, okay, Saban got it going again. Saban modernized it in 03, and they got all the institutional might. Les Miles and Ed Orgeron both won national titles. There isn't a coach in the country that thinks either of those guys is a good coach. Right. They didn't win it because of those guys and their schematic advantages. They won it in spite of those guys. Les Miles is like chewing grass and going with hunches and things. And Coach O's just running around.
Mangling the clock. Yeah.
Yeah. Go Tigers and taking his shirt off and stuff. Right. And yeah, clock management, everything. If you're Brian Kelly, you're like, these two won a national title. I'm going to win a national title here. I got a shot. I can't beat Bama, Ohio State, all of that. The top heavy nature of this sport, which none of the fans liked and has actually kind of waned a little bit this year, ironically, has now so off-kiltered the sport that the coaches at Oklahoma and Notre Dame said, can't do it here.
Yeah.
And that is unbelievable spot for this sport to be in.
It really is. I mean, it's shocking. These are the two most surprising days I have seen in, you know, 17 years of covering national college football. I just can't remember anything like it. I mean,
when have ever a coach at one high, high major left for another high, high major job? Not Urban Meyer took some, you know, one of his spells off, or somebody got tired of a guy and he got fired and he went there. Like, these guys got to those jobs and they stayed, like Joe Pa, you just stayed for 60 years, and Osborne and Bo and Woody and Bear Bryant. And, like, you know, Saban a little, but he went to the NFL or Spurrier. And, you know, it just doesn't happen.
The only time wildly successful, popular coaches have left those jobs is to go to the NFL or retire. That's it.
Or the scandal or something.
Or scandal. Yeah. Yes. Or yeah. Barry Switzer scandal. But no, this but doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. And it's happened 2 days in a row. I mean, it is just shocking. And the whole sport, you know, we've just had this massive paradigm shift that's been occurring. If you go back, you know, and I don't know exactly how causal it all is. NIL, transfer portal, which really have been small potatoes compared to what the adults have done. The adults were all worried that was going to just throw the sport into chaos. That hasn't. But what has is what the adults have done with Texas and Oklahoma realigning. And then all of a sudden, everybody else realigns. And then everybody gets twitchy and has to fire their coaches during the season. And then we get to this point now where you've got blue blood on blue blood crime. And USC raids Oklahoma and LSU raids Notre Dame. And Notre Dame's coach says, well, we may make the playoff, but I can't be there. Here's a group text. I mean, what in the hell is going on?
See you at 7.
Yes.
So the interesting thing with Lincoln Riley and Brian Kelly, okay, two very different people. And Oklahoma and Notre Dame, two very different programs. Those two, to me, the last 2 years have been the most fascinating programs to watch in recruiting. Not the best. It's not like, but Georgia's turned it on like crazy, right? And that's why Georgia's number one. Oklahoma got the 3 straight playoffs. Honestly, they should have beat Georgia. You know, they could have beat Georgia with Baker Mayfield, and they would have had a really good shot against Alabama to win that game. And there's a whole argument of, like, their defense wasn't as good as Georgia's. It's like Tua come in as a replacement. Like, there's a sliding door thing where Lincoln Riley wins a national title. You could talk to any Oklahoma fan. They've mapped it out pretty well. Okay. Sitting in one of those diners in East Enid, we'll go to. They got, they'll tell you how the Sooners actually could have. Then Oklahoma gets crushed two straight years in the playoff. Notre Dame's been to the BCS title game and then two playoffs. They got crushed. I mean, they can't compete. In the last couple years, Riley and Kelly have upgraded recruiting in a significant factor, even for two schools that always got good players. They stopped with the, we're good enough having the eighth best recruiting class. And Brian Kelly said, we can't beat Alabama on the field until we beat them for kids they really want. And the same thing with Oklahoma. And so if you, Lincoln Riley starts getting Malachi Nelson, and he's got all these five stars from Florida and California. He's bringing them in because if you look at Oklahoma, I looked this up today on a column, or I don't know when I wrote this column now. It's too many columns. Oklahoma has produced one Rivals five-star player since 2007 when Gerald McCoy came out.
Wow. That's it?
Daxton Hill, who's at Michigan. One five-star. Okay? The other school states in the SEC, every one of them's produced a ton. Oklahoma only has 4 million, less than 4 million people. I thought it was bigger. South Carolina is bigger than that. A million more. And they produce tons of five stars, let alone Georgia, Florida, Louisiana, Texas. So Oklahoma is always fighting on the other turf. And so these two had actually upgraded it. And you could see it. It was like, okay, we have to go into the lines. We have to fight and win and get the best quarterback. We have to get the best lineman. We have to get this. And even as they're doing it, in the last 24 hours, both of them said, can't do it. Can't do it. Oklahoma said, I can't be in the SEC and beat these guys week in, week out. Not in a state that doesn't produce five stars that are going to line up the way LSU is a dumpster fire. And they fire their coach and they got two in-state five stars going, nah, I ain't going nowhere, right? Oklahoma can't. They have to go to Dallas. They're Texas now is getting recruited by Alabama. Everyone's recruiting Texas now. It's a much different. And they're gonna have to go in against two SEC. He said, "Forget it. I'm going out west. I can own LA, and I got an easier path." And Brian Kelly sat there and said, "As good as my classes are right now, I can't do it. I'll go to LSU and take it." I think that's absolutely fascinating that these two guys, very different, both wave the white flag at places, at schools that have an immense amount of pride, that never wave the white flag.
Yeah. No, it does show you the very narrow point at the top of the pyramid. There ain't many schools that can stand at the very top. And so if you get a chance to go to one of them that theoretically can get you there, when you can get to the second or third highest step and then get your face kicked in, okay, eventually you want to try something different. And that's apparently what they both decided. It's just... You know, the amazing thing to me, like, I mean, they both still just shock me, but Riley at age 38 and having been at Oklahoma for, what, like 5 years, less entrenched than Brian Kelly, age 60, having been at Notre Dame more than a decade. Now, Kelly may have just been sitting there saying, look, I got one move left in me, and this is it, and I'll see how it goes, and might be looking, he's 60, Nick Saban is 70, he's figuring I can outlast Saban. If Saban's in for five, I can be in for 10, and maybe I'm ready to fill that vacuum there. But you still also have Georgia and Kirby Smart and everybody else in that league. So
everyone else coming. But yeah, I think he's looking and saying, if Coach O and Les Miles can do it,
yeah,
I can do it. I can get those players. So we mentioned the playoff, and this has been my thing with the playoff. And one of the reasons I've been so pro playoff expansion is I think the playoff, the NIL, the portal, and the playoff are all going to expand the number of contenders. And I never thought it would get to the point where Oklahoma and Notre Dame were losing their coaches because they have to get to the tip of that spear. But the bigger the tournament, the more variables, right? The more unpredictability. And a playoff trip isn't a death sentence where you just get curb stomped because you're automatically in the semis. You can build your program with early round victories.
True.
The way you win that home game, if they ever do this thing, and Notre Dame's winning a home game against, you know, whoever they're playing, Ole Miss or Wisconsin, it's some exciting game, and the stadium's crazy. It draws in more people. Gonzaga's got arguably the best program in America in basketball, and they get the number one recruit now every year. They were luck. They were just trying to make the NCAA tournament, and then it was Sweet 16s, and then it was, you know, build. If you just had taken the early Gonzaga teams and just thrown them in against Kentucky in like 1996, and they lose by 45 points, everyone laughs at them. It's gone. You build parity in the sport. The problem is it's a little too late now, because clearly what we've had is everything's about these two or three teams at the top that could just destroy everyone else. So I think the playoff will help. I think the NIL will help. And I think the transfer portal will help. Where we're at right now as a sport is in a bad spot. I mean, I love it. You love it. The theater of the absurd and the soap opera is great. I don't really care. But if I'm a Notre Dame fan or Oklahoma fan right now, I'm not thinking this is the greatest sport going right. I mean, what do we got to do to keep a coach?
Right. No. I mean, I agree with you in theory that, yes, an expanded playoff and those wins would be huge wins. I mean, people would be so excited, A, to make the playoff, and then you win an on-campus game. Oh, my God. People are going to talk about that for years, you know, especially if you are a striver like you are Cincinnati last year and you get somebody into Nippert and you win that game. Holy crap, you know, that it's not like you're a four seed and go get smoked by a number one seed. You have that moment of glory first, and then maybe you get smoked in the semifinals. Lacking that, no. I mean, it is such a small pool still. I mean, we're looking at this year's playoff, and I think most people are thinking, well, Georgia's way better than almost everybody. Maybe Michigan has a chance, but whoever Georgia plays in that 1-4 game, look out. That could be an ugly game. The lack of compelling semifinals has made the sport seem even more lopsided than it was before.
Yeah, LSU and USC, I think I said in the last pod, like, I want to see if USC got the deal done. They fired their coach early, and they made it work. They got Lincoln Riley. Lincoln Riley says he didn't hear anything about this. Didn't talk to USC until after Bedlam. I'm sure his agent
sure
did.
Yeah. Yeah, yet again, coaches only lie when their mouths
don't
move.
They both have the same agent too.
Yeah, they do have both the same agent.
Mm-hmm.
We can also get into this point where these are, you know, I don't know about these guys, but the coaches bemoaning people sitting out bowl games or the transfer portal.
Yeah, right.
Okay. But anyway, yeah, I mean, you really would make a life-changing decision right after an emotional game where you lose and you get a text or something like, you up? I'll be over in the morning. Like, I don't think so. But Notre Dame is scrambling. Oklahoma's scrambling now. But LSU and congratulations to LSU and USC. They used the time to early fire. Dude, everyone's getting fired early. Hey, Sark, buddy, you better win in September, boy. Man, everyone's going to fire early now and start working on their guys, okay? Because this worked geniusly for these two, and now Oklahoma and Notre Dame are sitting there holding back. Let's start with Notre Dame. Where do they go? Can Luke Fickle, I don't think he's leaving before his playoff appearance.
He ain't pulling the same Brian Kelly weasel move. No.
Luke Fickle is an ideal person for that job. Midwest. He's kind of blocked on going to the one he really wants, which is Ohio State, where he's the interim coach. We talked about, like, what about Michigan? Could he do that someday? But Harbaugh's now all set. Penn State's not going to open. Luke Fickle may stay. They're going to the Big 12. He may stay for a long time. One thing about this One thing that's funny is the two coaches, one school and one coach that were patient are sitting pretty right now. Michigan,
yep,
didn't fire Harbaugh, and Luke Fickle didn't just jump at whatever the hell it was, you know, go coach Auburn or something like that.
Yeah.
But is it Luke Fickle? Is it going to be Marcus Freeman who's going to get a shot to be maybe the interim coach here, the young defensive coordinator? Is it Matt Campbell, who some moderately good work at Toledo and Iowa State? Is that the one exciting? You know, the home run shot is Urban. Urban would bail. Yeah, he bailed. Urban got sick. He got sick on Monday and he's healthy by Wednesday. No, I don't. What's Notre Dame going to do?
I mean, I think you wait on Fickle. If you, again, I said this before about other jobs. We discussed this and Pete was saying you put yourself too far behind the eight ball. Luke Fickle's young. He could be a 20-year coaching star If you can get him, if you think that you can get him, you wait for Luke Fickell till after this playoff run. You know, I would not let the timetable of one recruiting cycle get in the way of that. And I do think if you're Notre Dame, this is one you got a shot. Now you'd have to, again, you'd have to do the agent back channels and all that to make sure it could happen. But if it can, I would absolutely wait on him. You know, some people threw out some, to me, some names that, you know, from an academic parallel standpoint, like Pat Fitzgerald at Northwestern, right. David Shaw at Stanford. Both those guys are coming off horrible seasons, and there's been real declining returns at Stanford. So, you know, I'm not sure they're all that attractive right now. Bob Stoops is a guy who's he's had his name come up with Notre Dame in the past. Hey, John Harbaugh's daughter's playing lacrosse there. Think he's going to leave the Ravens middle of the season, leave the Ravens and go there.
Maybe probably. They can do the Cliff Kingsbury bit. He's still like,
yeah.
I'm not going to discuss it. I don't know. Two things there is like, can you see the long game and are you going to be right about it? Right.
Right.
David Shaw or Pat Fitzgerald could be phenomenal. Can you deal with the fact that they're not going that well? Or do you just sit there and say, yeah, that's all right. Ohio State, when they made Luke Fickell an interim coach. Now look, that Trussell went, I think on Memorial Day, but they didn't jump on someone. They just made Fickell as the interim. And then they sat and waited for Urban. They got Urban. So I'm with you on the one, like, stop being a total rush. Everything's, it's now next. It's not even now. We're not even waiting 5 days to get into the playoff, right?
Right, yeah.
So I don't know. This is, Jack Swarbrick's a very good AD, but this is also a very tricky job. It's not easy, and you get the wrong guy. All right, let's go to Oklahoma. They got signs calling Lincoln Riley a traitor on campus. The transfer portal is full. The Dr. Pepper transfer portal. Everyone's running down to that thing. Lincoln Riley's out in California, basking in the sun, feeling it. It's a little ugly. Where does Oklahoma go? A lot of discussion. I've heard the buzz on Brent Venables, the Clemson defensive coordinator. It's funny. We were theorizing, would they go with the defensive coordinator from the SEC to help this transition the way they once did with Bob Stoops when they got him out of Florida. They go that route. Well, Venables is at he was at Clemson, same difference anyway. Where do you go with them and what do you need to make this work at Oklahoma? There could be an announcement you know, 1 minute after this hits and we got to do another emergency pod. I don't know.
That's everybody be ready. We might be live stream twitching the whole damn rest of the week.
What's the CNN guy, Wolf? What, he's like, stand by. You know, yeah,
that's right. That's why we can always break into coverage.
I watched during that election and it would take days. Stand by. We know you're not. Nothing happens. Yeah, go ahead.
Right. Well, I know where I am going. I'm going to my second beer of this podcast Sorry, it's been that kind of day here, but for Oklahoma, yeah, I mean the Venables buzz was strong today. You know, there's been some talk about Mark Stoops. There's been talk about Matt Campbell. I still found it a little bit curious, at least, that the announcement of Bob Stoops as the interim coach didn't say I'm only coaching one game. It just said he's the interim coach. We'll see how much Bob likes being the interim coach. I don't think they're necessarily proceeding with the thought that Bob's going to come back, but the way things are going, I mean, you don't rule out anything at this point. You know, the Venables thing's interesting. I mean, he has, talk about a guy who has stayed put and been patient. That was one place he had great success there. There was some talk that he and Stoops had eventually fallen out a bit, but I know that Joe Castiglione still has a good relationship with Venables. And at some point in time, whether he fell out whether Stoops fell out with Venables or Stoops fell out with Josh Heupel, who's at Tennessee, who he had fired, Bob Stoops can't make all the decisions if he's not the head coach. Joe Castiglione has to make those decisions. And if they think Venables is the guy, you get him. He's had success. Joe C. has had success, a lot of success, with guys who didn't have head coaching experience. So Venables would fit into that as well. It's one of those jobs, though, you've got to be ready to say, okay, I'm going in and I'm going to take on Nick Saban, and now I'm going to take on Brian Kelly at LSU, and I'm going to take on Kirby Smart and on and on and on. And it's like, wow, that it's a good job, but it's a hard job.
It was a great job in the Big 12.
Yes.
You won and won and won and won. You had an advantage over everybody. You avoided the dysfunction of Texas, which when they pull all pulling together on the occasion does have more advantages than you because they're in the state of Texas. But Oklahoma's formula worked for decades. You changed the formula. And that's why Lincoln Riley is gone. If you have a fan base that's a little cranky because you're going 12-2 and you're sitting there going, dude, I cannot consistently do that in the SEC. They don't have the in-state recruiting talent. They have to go somewhere else, just like Notre Dame, and win on someone else's turf. And like you said, that job just got worse. LSU's got a guy who can really coach now.
Yeah.
You know? And and you know what? Sam Pittman ain't too bad over at Arkansas.
Right.
And
Lane Kiffin, if he stays at Mississippi, doing a very
Jimbo
good job there.
Fisher is yeah. cranking. You have to. This is why the guy who was best equipped to bring them there was Lincoln Riley. He had cachet. Every skill player does love 7-on-7 loves Lincoln Riley's system. And that's why he was nailing. He's landing quarterbacks out of L.A. and wide receivers from Florida and running backs from Southern California. Like, from Orange County, like he's going all over to get kids because they want to go play for Lincoln Riley. So you have to find somebody who can do that because what you're seeing in these decisions is the ability to get the elite player and not those recruiting class rankings. The biggest disservice the recruiters do, and I understand why they do it, is this top 25 class thing. I always bring this up, but a five-star is a first-round draft pick. There's 30, 35 of them a year. It's like the NFL. And your top 100 or your top three rounds and your 250 is a draftable player. There are four stars that run to like 500. Those are undrafted free agents. They're not all the same. And when like right now, Georgia has 6 5-stars committed. They're going to have 6 first-round draft picks. Yeah. Imagine a team. In the NFL, teams will trade 2 first-round draft picks to move up 8 spots, right? A top 5 guy is much better than 25 to 30. It's just the talent evaluation now is way different than the old days. Everybody's on film. They have scouting departments. You have these you have these old head coaches sitting around helping Nick Saban watch video. Like yeah. it's a whole different ballgame. You can't just seed and go, well, look, that's Notre Dame, right? They got a whole bunch of nice kids there. Well, this guy came in, he's 183rd, and this guy was 314. Those guys, they can't play against the guys 6th. That guy, he can't cover Devontae Smith. It's not going to happen. So that's the guy who gets leaped by Najee Harris.
Yeah.
You have to have him. So Oklahoma has to find somebody who can recruit better than Oklahoma has ever recruited pretty much. And I know how good Oklahoma's been, but Barry Switzer didn't have to play this murderer's row.
Right.
But you have to have that level guy. And so that's the challenge for Oklahoma. They have gone, they're going, and I think they'll do fine. It's a great place to go play football. It's a great school to play football at. They will do all the bells and whistles, but you have to find someone who can recruit on a national level because you no longer have the advantage of local talent.
No, I mean, it's one of those things we have talked about on this podcast many times is until the fans see that it's going to work and work really well, you're asking them to cheer for increased revenue and better buildings and more staff. Okay, great. That's why you're going to the SEC. Well, is it going to translate to actually winning? Because that's what they care about. And if it doesn't, then you've screwed the pooch. So they need to have this thing work out where you can go into the SEC and make more money and build everything you want to build and, you know, pay everyone what you want to pay them and then still go 12-1 and go to the college football playoff.
Yeah. And at this level of salary and this level of, you're gone quick because it's no fun. See every stadium. Once they have that 6-6 season or that 7-5 season, the stadium's 2/3 full. LSU, one of the greatest places to watch a football game, except until they're losing, and it's half full, you know? So it's like, there's so much to this where it's like, oh, we got more revenue. You know what I think's fun is winning, you know? we talk about those teams that jump from FCS to FBS, and it's like, well, this is, we're in with the big guys now. It's like, yeah, it looks like they have a lot of fun in Montana and North Dakota State. Yeah. Like, do you want to be right. that, or you want to get killed? It, you know, even these conference jumps rarely work.
Right.
Nebraska had a lot more fun when they were in the Big 12. Colorado had a lot more fun when they were in the Big 12. Boston College, Syracuse, these programs used to be something. West Virginia, like, it's just, it doesn't, once you change that formula, you think you're going to be the one that's special. Maybe Oklahoma's special, but you better get this right. Same with Notre Dame. They better get this thing right. I will, you know, especially when you're now going to go to a 12-team playoff and there is a pretty easy route into that playoff sitting right where you were.
Yeah.
So if you don't take my word for it, take L.A. Lincoln's.
L.A. Lincoln and Bayou Bryan, baby.
All right. So the compensation deals are incredible. Dennis Dodd's claiming maybe it's $15 million for Kelly. I don't know if that's true, but it's going to be, it's good. Like, once the market got reset by Mel Tucker.
Yeah. Everything's like totally blown out of the water now, you know?
Right. I'm not saying Mel wasn't worth it. I advocated that Michigan State had to pay big to keep him. But like, if you're anybody, you're like, this guy had one winning season and he's getting $95 million. Yo.
Yeah. Hey. Everybody's agent's like, my record's better than his record.
Yeah.
What, like, am I getting?
But the Lincoln Riley one is pretty funny. There's a whole bunch. You know, who knows if this is true? USC is a private school. I have no idea if they'll ever release this stuff, or you got to figure it out later. And they say who their highest paid. Supposedly $110 million. How many years did he get? Do we know? 10? So maybe not 11 sure. million a year. I don't know. Whatever. Yeah, he's making 9 a ton. 9 years,
whatever. Yes. He's making more than double figure millions.
This is from Robert Hefner the fifth, who is a Sooner insider. His Twitter feed talks about energy and technology. I don't know, but let's say this is true, because who the hell cares? It's a podcast. USC is buying both of Lincoln's homes in Norman. Apparently they had two homes
in Norman. It's such a big city that, you know, you need one near campus and then one somewhere else. I mean,
maybe
Norman is about the size of East Enid and West Enid. Okay.
Well, he does. I did look up his real estate. I found one of them that was like a nice $2.1 million, got a nice pool, all that. Anyway, USC is buying both homes in Norman for $500,000 over asking. Well, just ask for like $10 million, right? I don't know. Or 500 grand more than it's worth. That's essentially $1 million bonus right there. So how psyched are you of the neighbors? Because your Zillow numbers is going to fall. I mean, yeah. And I was like, because my guess is he bought a house as an assistant and kept it. And then he got the head coach and he bought the big house, right?
Probably.
The assistant house. I mean, you know, that thing might only be like, you know, $250,000 house or something. It might be just in a regular neighborhood, right?
Right.
Can't be keeping
that.
But yeah, they have to buy him a $6 million home in L.A. So that's like a two bedroom.
Small lawn. Yeah.
Small lawn. Yeah. And then unlimited use of the private jet 24/7 for his family.
You know, I mean, if he's getting all those things, good for Lincoln Riley. People are, the cost of living. Screw the cost of living. If you're making that much money, you can afford the cost of living.
Somebody was talking about the taxes. Like, all right, come on.
Yeah, come on.
Everyone always says, like, no one lives in California anymore, except like the 40 million people who do.
Yeah.
Everyone moved out. It's a Yogi Berra thing, right? It's too crowded. Nobody goes there anymore.
Right.
All right. One other for the emergency pod. We couldn't do it, but we just had to mention this. TCU made their official announcement for Sonny Dykes as the new coach. And just epic. They had an entrance via helicopter. They flew the helicopter right into the stadium there and landed it just near the 50-yard line. And as fans stood and cheered, I wrote on Twitter, like, if I had to try to explain this sport to like an alien, I just... What does the helicopter got to do with anything?
We can't just put him in a limo to go from Fort Worth to Dallas or Dallas to Fort Worth. Sorry. If we're going to take him across the Tom Landry Expressway there from I-35 E-I-35W. We got to go splashy, man. We got to get the helicopter. It's unbelievable.
I mean, it was definitely the best entrance. it's a lot cheaper than this. LSU needs to, like, I don't know what. Brian Kelly's got to leave that meeting on like a rocket ship. Get like Elon Musk's rocket ship.
That's it. Jetpack, you know, yeah, something. Because
and then people are like, Cal gave him an Uber to get out of there after going 19-30. anyway, Sonny Dykes got a copter, man. That's where we're at in this sport. That's where we're at.
Sonny's got the swag copter.
Golly. I mean, coming off that solid 4-4 season in the American Athletic Conference, you need a copter.
Yeah. Remember the last guy that was coptering around Texas was Kevin Sumlin. He got fired.
Well, let me say this. People, just to wrap this, people generally do not want to root for Notre Dame. I want Notre Dame to make this playoff. I want Marcus Freeman to lead him to a national championship. And I want every one of those players to just cuss out Brian Kelly and have Brian Kelly sitting in his oversized mansion making recruiting calls going, I could have won a national title at Notre Dame. And they'll make movies about it, buddy.
Oh, I'm telling you know what this is, Dan? This is 1989 NCAA tournament Michigan when Bill Frieder set up the deal to go to Arizona State, but said, I'll stay through the tournament. And Bo Schembechler was the AD, and he said, a Michigan man will coach Michigan in the tournament. That's a Notre Dame man's going to coach Notre Dame in the playoff if they make the playoff, and it ain't going to be Brian Kelly.
I don't normally root. I don't care who wins these things. Come on, man. That'd just be fantastic.
It would be pretty awesome.
These four guys that they get dragged to the 7 a.m. meeting tomorrow. Double bird. Get out of here. We're going to win this damn thing.
That's the opening scene of the movie, right? Plus movie. Yep.
Yes.
We're walking in the freezing.
Get that old man out of here. Get that old man out of here. We're just going to, right? We just got to go win the whole
damn
thing.
They're all handing in their jerseys at 7 a.m. meeting.
They get in as the four seed, just beat the crap out of Georgia, like just coming out of the gates, just Brian Kelly just making, yelling at them on the television. Could be great.
So that's what we need. We need Alabama to lose to Georgia, and we need Oklahoma State to lose to Baylor. Boom. I think it can happen.
Or Cincinnati lose. Or Cincinnati. Lose.
Yeah, yeah.
No, or I mean, Michigan lose.
There's plenty of options.
Again, this is not like a, this. Is not
no,
like
it's not far-fetched.
Pulling an inside straight. Like, it's like, yeah.
Not far-fetched.
We'll be back tomorrow with more mayhem. Keep subscribing. If you're new to the pod, you're missing out. We have a subscription. Free. Get what you pay for. Share us on social media. Tell your friends about us. We'll get Pete back tomorrow. We'll do the normal pod. And who knows? A lot
quick
of pods
salute,
this week.
Quick salute to Pete for breaking the news on...
great job on, by Pete.
Sources!
Yeah. Pete, finally,
sources
finally
were good.
Sources paid off. He did a good job on that one. And props to Sully for putting this thing together quick. We will talk to you later.